A new year is about to dawn in the Chinese calendar, but one thing we traditionally see in the world's most populated country is missing. And that's where we start the week on CNN 10. I'm Coral Azuz. Every year we've reported on this, we've talked about how Lunar New Year, or Spring Festival, causes the world's largest human migration. For this holiday, there are more train travelers in China than there are people living in the United States. We're talking roughly 400 million rail passengers, and that doesn't count the tens of millions who travel by air or use other forms of transportation. But as the year 4719 begins on the Chinese calendar this Friday, not nearly as many people are crossing the country to see their families. Some are missing their only opportunity to do that for the year. And while the festival that usually lasts 15 days will still be celebrated by more than a billion people in China and other Asian countries, the Chinese government is encouraging and in some cases requiring people there to celebrate at home.
Strolling the aisles of a Shanghai grocery store, Vicky Wong is stocking up ahead of the most important holiday in China, the Chinese New Year, or Spring Festival.
I think I like this.
Traditionally, the holiday marks the largest mass migration of humans each year. In China, major cities empty out as hundreds of millions travel back to their home provinces. But last year's outbreak in Wuhan coincided with the start of the Chinese New Year and made for a perfect storm. Packed train stations like this one in Beijing, combined with a rapidly spreading virus. This year, the government urging, in some cases even ordering people, not to travel.
Yogurt.
Wong is among the millions sacrificing precious time with family this holiday, following the government guidance to stay put.
We have to make a little bit of sacrifice for everyone to keep us safe.
While China's touted its strict and seemingly effective containment efforts, recent cluster outbreaks have resulted in the government's travel restrictions. Already in the first 3 days of the annual travel rush, passenger rail trips plummeted more than 70%. The normally packed train stations are now eerily empty. It seems many are following the government's suggestion to not travel. And some state-owned companies are even paying their employees a few hundred dollars, encouraging them not to return to their hometown and instead to use the holiday time to explore the cities in which they live and work. But some are still determined to travel home.
I think the test is too harsh.
By video chat, we spoke with 21-year-old Dan D. Not his real name, as he doesn't want to get in trouble for criticizing the government. He just wrapped up 21 days of quarantine, which included heavy surveillance right outside his front door, all to travel home for the Chinese New Year, which he says is deeply personal for migrant workers.
The Spring Festival is the only chance and the most important chance for them to go home to stay with their family. That's why I think they need to go home.
Okay, this is good. It means travel safe and comes the good luck.
As for those who choose to stay, like Wong, they're still finding ways to celebrate. Asking her parents and sister over video chat for their advice on cooking the Chinese New Year dinner, a meal she and millions of others will eat separated from loved ones, as China works to halt a decades-long tradition of mass migration so as to prevent a repeat of last year's rapid spread of the virus. David Culver, CNN, Shanghai.
10-second trivia. Super Bowl 49 holds the record for what achievement? Highest score, highest viewership, longest game, or closest score? With viewership estimates exceeding 114 million people, the Super Bowl held in 2015 was America's highest rated ever. Ratings have decreased somewhat since then, with 102 million people having watched last year's game. We don't yet have the final estimates on last night's Super Bowl, but we can tell you it was the least attended championship in NFL history, thanks to COVID. Of the almost 66,000 seats at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, only about 25,000 were made available to socially distanced people. If you thought there were more, you might have seen cardboard cutouts sitting in. It was a major drop from last year's Super Bowl attendance of more than 62,000 people, but Super Bowl 55 still capped a season in which the games went on despite the presence of a disease pandemic. And Dr. Sanjay Gupta wanted to find out how the NFL managed to keep coronavirus largely on the sidelines.
This is a sport defined by close contact, an environment ripe for transmission.
There's other people who say, it's absolutely ludicrous to even try this. What do you say to them?
I feel like it's the right thing to do to try to learn to live with this virus. I really do.
Dr. Alan Sills is the chief medical officer for the NFL. He was brought in as a neurosurgeon who thought he'd be dealing with concussions. And then the pandemic changed everything. I initially met up with him at the beginning of the season.
We just have to recognize we're dealing with an unpredictable pandemic, and so we'll have to adjust along the way.
On September 10th, the Kansas City Chiefs kicked off against the Houston Texans in the first game of the season. At the time, there were more than 6 million confirmed coronavirus cases in the United States.
Now, right before the Super Bowl, how did things go?
I think that what we've tried to do at every step is to make the best and the safest decisions we can, and we've tried to evolve and learn along the way.
While cases around the country exploded, now at more than 26 million confirmed, the NFL was relatively untouched, with a positivity rate of 0.08%. So what worked for the NFL, and what can we all learn from it?
We had an outbreak in Tennessee, and when we went in and really dug into that and tried to understand how did transmission occur despite our protocols, that's when we began to realize it wasn't just 6 feet in 15 minutes.
Put simply, Dr. Sills said it wasn't the playing or the practices that were the largest concern, but these three things: eating, greeting, and meeting.
Meeting inside, even if you're more than 6 feet apart, if you're in a poorly ventilated room for a long period of time, if someone's positive, there can be transmission inside those rooms. Eating together, very high risk activity. You know, most people don't have a mask on when they're eating. And then the greeting part is just the social interactions outside the facilities. You know, when you interact in the community, if someone's positive and you go and get a haircut or you have a massage at your house.
How did the NFL know? They tested daily. And they contact traced and tracked the movements of more than 11,000 players and staff, even alerting them if they were too close to one another.
If we move closer together than 6 feet, you'll start to see it blinking red.
Now keep in mind, the CDC defines close contact like this: being within 6 feet of an infected person for a cumulative total of 15 minutes or more over a 24-hour period. But the league's data found transmission was occurring with less time and more distance. These are considerations for anyone, anywhere, to assess their risk. Ventilation. Are you indoors or outdoors? Are you in a car with the windows up, or are you in a large open stadium? The more air circulation, the better. Masks. What kind of masks are being used, and do they fit correctly? And finally, time and distance. The longer and closer you are around someone, the increased risk for transmission.
If you're failing in two or more of those categories, that's what we consider a high-risk close contact. But I think the biggest thing we learned, universal masking works. It's the most effective strategy that we have.
How hard would it be to replicate what you were able to do at the NFL?
It wasn't the fact that we tested every single day. It wasn't the fact that everyone wore a fancy proximity tracking device everywhere they went. What prevented transmission was mask usage, avoiding in-person meetings, staying in the open air environments, not eating together, prompt symptom reporting, isolation of anybody that's exposed.
If it weren't for a security camera, only one person would have ever known this had happened, and that person is Joe Oriens. He's a custodian at Ohio's Liberty Benton Middle School. Last Thursday, he casually walked out to half court, tossed a shot backwards, drained it, threw up his arms for a moment, and went back to work. But the principal saw the video and tweeted it, and now the shot seen round the world has made Oriens a living legend. More like Orion's, cause he's a star! Puns aside, when he was asked why he tried a half court shot, Oriens responded he had just as good a chance to make that as a layup, cause he's not that good. We disagree. He proves you don't need to be a pro to be NBA amazing as well as a really good sport. Thank you for giving us a sporting chance to explain the news. Sir Robert Borden was the 8th Prime Minister of Canada. He's also the namesake of Sir Robert Borden High School. It is in Ottawa. Thank you for watching on YouTube. I'm Carl Azus for CNN 10.